Hello again and welcome to another edition of Authors Audio. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Remember, you can listen to all of our interviews by visiting our website at www.authorsaudio.com. Click on the listen icon on the homepage and you can listen to any of our interviews there or the iTunes icon if you prefer that. I have with me today a Canadian writer. His name is Shane Joseph. He began writing as a teenager living in Sri Lanka, writing short stories and radio play scripts. He also wrote humorous corporate skits, travelogue, case studies, and technical papers. But now he writes in the short story genre and in the novel format. His career stints to prepare him to be this wonderful writer include stage and radio actor, pop musician, encyclopedia salesman, that's an absolute must for any writer, a lathe machine operator, an airline executive, a travel agency manager, and the vice president of a global financial services company and management consultant. So you can see that upward curve there. He's really going somewhere. He is self-taught with 4 degrees under his belt. He obtained through long-distance education. Shane has always been an avid traveler and has visited one country for every year of his life. He tried husky riding in Finland with no training, trekking the Inca Trail in Peru, hitchhiking in Australia without a map, which I can tell you is quite an accomplishment. He was chased by a wild elephant in Zambia. However, he seems to have outrun that elephant, which we are very happy to report. Shane is a graduate of the Humber School for Writers, studying under the mentorship of the Giller Prize and Governor General Award-winning author David Adams Richards. Shane's first novel was published in 2004. His short stories have appeared in literary magazines and anthologies in Canada, India, and Sri Lanka. His latest publication is a wonderful collection of short stories in a book called Fringe Dwellers, which I highly recommend. And I'd like to welcome very warmly to Authors Audio, Shane Joseph. And Shane, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for inviting me, Jake.
Thanks, Shane, for coming. It's a real pleasure. And your brand new book, Fringe Dwellers, is really a wonderful book of short stories with all kinds of different and interesting characters, I must say, with outcomes in each story that you're not really prepared for, which makes for an excellent read. You got into writing, you wanted to be a writer quite early in life, did you?
Yes, I started writing when I was about 17. And then I stopped when I was about 23 because I had run out of ideas. You know, there was only so much I could write about teenage angst and so on. And then I took a hiatus of about 20 years when I was deciding to live. You know, I built a career, started a family, immigrated, traveled. And then I got back to writing about 8 years ago, and I haven't stopped. And I find that the gap has helped me to become more confident. My ideas are better formed. And I have a motherload of information now to draw from. So it has really helped me.
You've picked up a lot of interesting information from your life. As you've been a stage and radio actor, a pop musician, an encyclopedia salesman, and so on and so forth. Sounds a lot like my bio. But it is actually a very good resource if you have done these different things, because as a writer, you have a lot to draw on. So with Fringe Dwellers, I know that you do have another book. Your first book was called Redemption in Paradise, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And that book, just for our listeners, could you very briefly describe that one?
Okay. Redemption in Paradise, first of all, was a novel, and I set it in Sri Lanka, which is where I was born and raised. And it tells the story of a group of Western tourists who are on a tour of the Wartown Island on a bus, where they meet with a mixed bag of misadventures, if you will, which puts them into a life-threatening situation and forces each of them to examine their own lives and come to terms with the demons that they have been running away from. The theme of the book, again, like Fringe Dwellers, is of second chances, because I firmly believe that we get a second and sometimes even a third chance to learn certain life lessons. Some of the lessons in Redemption in Paradise go back several past lives of some of the characters. And so by setting the novel in Sri Lanka, which is predominantly a Buddhist country, the concept of reincarnation is not alien in that setting.
Yes.
And reincarnation plays a big part in the novel.
Mm-hmm. The eternal return, yeah. Now, Fringe Dwellers is about many different kinds of people who are in, what would you call it, in transition. They're a little bit out of the normal individual's situation. And what you're doing is bringing these diverse people together in the stories. The meeting of the people obviously creates a whole new world for both of them. How did you come to write this book?
Well, I have been a fringe dweller myself in one shape or form. And this concept of marginalization, which is what all the fringe dwellers are dealing with, was very strong for me. And I set all the stories in Canada, in around the Toronto area. And I looked at the cast of players who include beggars, bums, widows, orphans, immigrants, you know, unemployed people, divorced people, sick people, the dying, and even the dead. And you know, what stands out for these people is in our success-oriented society, you know, it takes only a small twist of fate to send a person out onto the fringe. You know, an accident, an illness, an unforeseen event, and suddenly you're a fringe dweller. And I find, you know, even among the very successful ones in our society, you know, the ones who have the monster home in the suburbs, the trophy family, the corner office job, the cottage in the lake, you know, all these folks have some private tragedy that they're trying to deal with, and they usually tend to mask those. And I thought, let me bring those out, let me put those on the table, and let's talk about these. And the richest stories, I think, in human experience are among these fringe dwellers, or in the fringe type stories that we hide in our lives. And so I wanted to bring those out, and I found that you know, every time I go out to a reading, for instance, and I talk about marginalization, people who are in the audience, who are, you know, good middle class types, who I would never imagine had similar experiences, come out and talk about how, you know, they've either had some form of alienation, some child abuse, suicide in the family, you know, abandonment, doing dead-end jobs or doing dangerous jobs, things that, you know, make them fringe dwellers. I sometimes wonder whether Canada is completely populated with fringe dwellers.
Mm. Well, these are people that definitely have their own story to tell, and it's usually not, like you say, it's not a story that everybody carries with them. Does this come back to your immigrating to Canada from Sri Lanka?
Well, it's a bit of both. I mean, when I was growing up in Sri Lanka, I was a minority community member. We were, you know, European remnants, if you will, of a colonialized country. So when I was growing up there, I had to deal with the effects of being a minority community member. I had to deal with, you know, I didn't speak the national language. I learned it as a second language, although I was quite proficient in it. Then I had to find my home, and I moved a couple of times. I went to Australia for a while. I then moved to the Middle East. I was an expatriate in Dubai for several years. And then I looked to emigrate, and the only country I could find a home was in Canada. I came here, again, you know, you struggle for jobs, you struggle to find a home, you struggle to get accepted. The usual, you know, struggle, if you will. And then once you get established, and I did build a career here, and I did quite well, there was always the question of, you know, so what happens when the next economic downturn takes place and you lose a job, you know? And there was always the constant threat of that at any time you could be sent out into the margins. And so, you know, I guess my experiences have conditioned how I came to write the book. but I think that's common to a lot of people, you know.
Yeah, especially these days, people are worried about their jobs because of the in quotes recession we're in or whatever it is.
Right.
But that's not any different than any other country in the world, really, is it?
That's true. That's true. You know, but in other countries, I think people don't make a you know, don't hide the fact that they're not safe. I mean, you live in the third world countries, the sense of danger is a little bit more obvious. You know, in a safe country like Canada, you know, you take safety for granted, and you take a middle class existence for granted. But now I feel that even that is somewhat threatened, you know, with these subtle changes that can happen in your life.
And the job markets and so on and so forth, there's no guarantee, especially our neighbors to the south are finding out in great numbers, there's no guarantee that the economy is going to remain stable for your whole life. We have been through a period of large growth here, but this whole fiasco with the market and so on has really scared a lot of people, and rightly so.
And it's not just the economic aspect, you see, it's the it's even one's personal health. You know, I mean, you could be well today and something can happen tomorrow, which suddenly changes your whole outlook on life, right? You get an illness, a life-threatening illness, or you meet with an accident on the highway and life changes. So,
well, a nice thing, though, if you believe in reincarnation, that, you know, whatever happens, you'll be back.
It's nice to know that there's another chance. and it's also nice to know that, you know, whatever befalls you in this life is something that you probably have to learn and live through. And so it's not the end of the world. It's just another lesson to be learned.
You are a practicing Buddhist, would you say?
No, I'm not actually. I'm a Christian, but I was raised in a, you know, as I said, in a Buddhist country. I was very drawn to the Buddhist philosophy. You know, I'm very tolerant of all religions. I'm very curious to find out why people practice a certain religion or philosophy. So I have always been very drawn to the study of Buddhism and the life of the Buddha. So that's what actually prompted me to write that particular novel and set it in Sri Lanka. Yeah.
Well, I think our listeners can see that you or understand that you were really a person that was looking for a new home, that Sri Lanka was probably going to be an issue for quite a while as far as safety and assurance and a place where one could raise a family with some kind of future. And I guess you just traveled around basically to see what the rest of the world was like. And when you came to Canada, you yourself were, I guess in your terminology, a fringe dweller. You did very well here because you obviously worked very hard and you got a good education, and you are now, I have to call you mainstream, I hope you don't mind. But how long was this book in germination? How long did this book take to write from the time that you started to reflect? I would imagine you're reflecting back on all your experiences and listening to the people here and combining those experiences with the stories that people told you in Canada.
Stories came in you know, whenever they came, and they've taken me about 6 years to put them all together, because I've written a lot more stories than the 12 in the book. But I picked these 12 because they had this common theme of fringe dwellers. And so if I take the first story that was written, it must have been written about 6 or 7 years ago. And so I say 6 years in total to put them all together.
They're all very well done, I must say, and all different in their own way, all different topics and different kinds of people. But these people, like you say, have certain things in common. Which of the 12, I know this is a very difficult question, and I'll ask you and you can say, but which of the 12 do you... As some of the 12, do you really find that you really connected with when you were writing them?
Well, the the title story is my favorite. It's the one called Fringe Dwellers.
Yeah.
It's about a curious friendship that develops between a recently arrived university-educated immigrant from India who is struggling to get a job in Canada, and a World War II veteran who is living on the streets. As one of them, the Indian immigrant, is trying to get in from the fringe, and the other, the World War II vet, is trying to get back. Mm-hmm. And they're both, in their own way, still fighting a battle. And what I tried to portray was that it doesn't really matter whether you're born here several generations or whether you're newly arrived. Your circumstances make you the outsider. And in the end, these two bond together. They, in effect, become each other's only friend and help each other through that journey, which I thought was, it was interesting for me to explore. Because, you know, I was actually one side of that coin. Yes. The hardest story for me was actually the first story I wrote. It's called Rage. And it deals with entrapment and incest. And I know that a lot of that happens in this country, even though we try to hide it. There was even a case recently in Austria where, you know, some horrible things that had happened.
Yes.
It was hard for me because this is one story where no one is saved. You know, the crimes were just too damaging. And I wanted to illustrate that point because as much as marginalization of some sorts can help you to learn lessons and make you a better person, an extreme form of marginalization can actually destroy you.
Yes.
And I wanted to make that point clear.
Yes.
So those were my two kind of extremes of the stories I wrote, and then everything else sort of falls in the middle, where the characters, in a sense, come back from the fringe, or, you know, it's in our human nature to try and make a comeback and try to get back in. And they all, in their own way, try to do that. Some of them fail and some of them succeed, but they all try.
Yes. Well, you know, it's funny, when I was reading the book, I got the idea one day that to really, in a sense, anyone who strikes out on their own to do something that basically comes from their own impetus and comes from their own heart. For example, I want to be a writer, or I want to be an architect, or I want to be something. You really are in a way a fringe dweller at that point, because you're striking out on a new ground that really comes from your own desire. And your own desire at first was to come to Canada after, of course, traveling all over. And once you've made that decision and you get here, then the real impact of your decision, of course, hits you right in the face, and you realize, well, oh my God, I have all these different things to do, and this is going to be a completely different story of my life.
Exactly.
So a lot of people, I think, are going to be able to relate to that, and the stories are very readable and very well done. So I want to congratulate you on that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
You are writing some other material now, I understand.
Yes, I'm preparing to get my third book published. It's been subtitled as a dystopian novel of hope. It's called After the Flood. It'll be out hopefully in November this year. And the easiest way to describe it is it's a sort of a Noah's Ark meets Samson and Delilah at Camelot in the Brave New World. Put all those four together. So it's set somewhere in the near future, in around 2045. And it's not a science fiction novel. I would say it's more a speculative fiction novel. So it's set in North America that's destroyed and rebuilt after a giant flood that occurred in 2012, and that's not too far away. And it deals basically with the clash of fundamentalism, you know, as designed by man, with the middle way, which was preached by the great prophets, as, you know, Jesus, the Buddha, Muhammad, and so on. And I wanted to sort of bring out the fact that, you know, fundamentalism is not something out there. You know, we're fighting wars in other countries today to try and eradicate that. But fundamentalism, if you give the right conditions, can actually take root even in your backyard, you know. And I was trying to draw attention to the fact that, you know, we have a a line in our national anthem that says, "We stand on guard for thee." And if we don't stand on guard and be mindful of our values and let these forces take root in our backyard, fundamentalism will take over right here in North America. We don't have to look outside. So that was the kind of premise to say, you know, if there's a cataclysm and a lot of the things we have and value are wiped out, then we have to be somewhat vigilant that we don't let, influences that we are not accustomed to come in here and take root.
Well, the vigilance is a very important point, and not only just in terms of finances or anything, but just in general, the Canadians, I think, have to be very vigilant that our value system is maintained. And I do see part of it eroding from what when I knew it when I was a kid here in Toronto. And this is something that, does bother a person sometimes when you see some changes that are not in the positive side. You know, you have to be vigilant and say, look, if we want a country that people want to come to, or if we want a country that is very livable and, you can do all these things like raise your kids and have good jobs if you work hard, then you have to have behind that, you have to have the values and the ethics and everything else that goes with it to maintain that.
And when I say fundamentalism, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not aimed at any particular religious group. I mean, any of us taking any value system to an extreme, which excludes others, you know, creates a form of fundamentalism, right? So you can have whether they're Christians or others of other religious persuasions, anything taken to an extreme creates fundamentalism. And that's what I was trying to outline here.
I totally agree with you there, Shane. That's absolutely true. And that's hopefully what we try to do here in Canada, although as an immigrant, from time to time, I'm sure you have experienced some kind of marginalization that way. Would that be right?
Sometimes, and not a lot. I must say that I was very pleased that my entry into Canada, other than in the job market initially, where I didn't have the Canadian experience, but socially I've been well accepted. And, I was quite happy. My children have grown up, being totally Canadian. I have had no overt, marginalization, if you will, or I haven't been shunned from social groups. But people are curious about me, obviously, because I've had a very mixed background, and I make an interesting conversation at a party. but other than that, I haven't felt that. I think that out of most countries, Canada is definitely still, in the lead when it comes to welcoming outsiders.
We'd like to think that, and we'd like to keep that that door open because we are a country of immigrants mainly. This has contributed to a very, very, very different culture. Canada is a kind of an experiment, or North America is a kind of an experiment, because we don't have any one particular group. There are many groups, and it is like a melting pot in some ways. And but that's good, because people get to exchange new ideas. And generally speaking, people seem to get along quite well. So that's a real benefit. I'm just wondering which writers have influenced you in your writing career.
Well, when I was in school, I was heavily influenced by Ernest Hemingway, John Steinbeck, and Graham Greene. When I read those writers today, I find they're great masters of the craft. In the short story genre, I still like to read Anton Chekhov, Flannery O'Connor, and Bernard Malamud. What I like about these writers is that they can create a unique geographic setting, almost like their own little world, and they set it in a time warped kind of stage, and they introduce such unforgettable characters. All those three elements: the setting, the time, and the characters are things that I really like, and I really try to emulate that.
Yes. And you also went to the Humber School for Writers as well, didn't you?
Yes, I did a correspondence course there for about 7 months. I was partnered with a mentor, David Adams Richards. He was the Giller Prize-winning author of, and Governor General's winning author of several books. It was a great experience. I learned a lot. I would send in a chapter every 2 weeks, and David would critique it and send it back to me. And it was a great way to learn from a master of how to do things. And it was a very unforgettable experience. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you're obviously a man that likes to really dive in there and learn and get experiences, not only with your traveling, but your studies as well, because you're certainly well-educated and successful in other ways other than writing. So you've really done a great job there, Shane.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And by the way, Shane's got an amazing website. It's just shanejoseph.com. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. I also have a blog up there, which I invite readers to take a look at, because I try not to write the typical blog entries of, you know, I got up this morning, I had coffee and looked out of the window kind of stuff. I write little essays on you know, how I look at the world and how I see, you know, either political or social life in Canada. And, you know, it's nice to have some feedback if people either agree or disagree with me of how I view the world. Because writing is a lonely business, and sometimes feedback is very, very, very helpful.
Yes, it is. Yes. I'm just wondering if you may have a little bit of time just to read something from your book. I think people would be really happy to hear that, because they get a writer reading their own writing. It seems to bring out things that draws the people closer to the writer.
Sure, I'd be happy to read from maybe the first story in Fringe Dwellers, the title story.
That's great.
And I'll read the first couple of pages. As I mentioned, it's about a story between an Indian immigrant, a younger man, and a World War II veteran, obviously older man. And this scene is the first scene when the two of them meet, and it's narrated from the Indian immigrant's point of view. All right. The old man first came into the coffee shop 3 days after we opened for business. My daughter Amina was behind the counter with her mother, while her older brother Roshan served tables, marking time until he could scoot off to hockey practice. For me, it was a time of rushing, trying to get everything in order. I had always worked at a desk job. This new one of constant movement and multitasking was draining. Still, it made me proud to be working after months of fruitless job hunting. He was old, but a big man. He walked with a limp and wore a torn, oversized coat. His gray beard was crony. Long, matted hair under an old beret gave the impression he'd just woken from a nearby alleyway. I saw Roshan making his way over, pointing to the no loitering sign that my wife had been so insistent upon. Ha! Huh, we came from a good class in India. No going down further in life than we have to. Opening a coffee shop was bad enough for her. Catering to derelicts was pushing it a bit too far. But before my son got to him, the old man pulled a crumpled $20 bill from the folds of his shabby coat and plunked it on the table. Roshan looked back at me and I shrugged. Our customer was solvent. We could not refuse him service. I served the coffee and bagel he ordered while my wife wrinkled her nose. As I neared, I almost gagged on the rancid stench of sweat, reminding me of the beggars in India. It's funny, unwashed bodies all over the world expel the same odor. So much for cultural disparities. We're all one. At least in our filth. Good morning, I said, placing the mug and plate in front of him. He grunted, and I thought Canadians were polite. As I turned away, he said, "Why'd you come to this country?" His voice was raspy, like that of a heavy smoker. I looked back. He hadn't touched his coffee or bagel. He was staring at me. "You hear me? Why did we come? For the children, of course." That was my stock answer now, even to this bedraggled stranger. Why would a 40-ish ex-civil servant with a BA in English from India, with no Canadian experience and speaking in a funny accent, come to Canada otherwise? Believe me, I had tried everything to get a job, from cold calling to mailing umpteen resumes to attending the few interviews I managed to obtain, but I always got that same response. "Your qualifications do not quite match what we're looking for." "For our children, Amina and Roshan," I said, pointing to them. I detected stubbornness in my voice that my wife would have said was out of character for me. "For the children, eh?" He nodded, as if that was a good enough reason, and started to slurp his coffee, dismissing me. A busy spurt took my attention as a bus dropped off another horde, desperate for its caffeine fix. "This is a good location. You will make lots of money," the previous owner, an immigrant like us who had come out 10 years ago, told us. He was selling up and moving to Richmond Hill, having paid his dues to poor immigrantdom. Yet his price was high, and it was still unclear how many customers we needed to break even. And what about weekends, when public transit ran a skeleton schedule along our route? Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the old man waving me over as I tried juggling a tray of used cups and plates left by patrons from 2 busloads ago. "So you came out for the children, eh?" was all he said. I noticed that the bagel was only half eaten, and he was stuffing the remainder in his pocket. "Can I get you more coffee?"
"No, thanks."
He rose, and a pungent gust wafted to my nostrils as crumbs popped out of the folds of his coat and strewed the floor.
"That's a very good reason, my friend. The children, they must never, never make the same mistakes."
He broke wind mightily before pushing through the door.
Wow, that was great, Shane. Thanks so much. You really do get the instance of the vernacular and the different people and voices when you read the book. Maybe sometime you'll make it into an audiobook, because I find they are read best by the author if the author can read them. It's really great. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Well, Shane, it is coming up to that time where we're at the end of our program, but again, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to come and talk about your brand new book called Fringe Dwellers. You can get it at your local bookstore, or you can buy it directly through Authors Audio. It will be on the featured authors page for 7 to 10 days, and then it will be in the Authors Audio archive section after that.
Right. The book is available actually through my website and through the website of Hidden Brook Press, which is the publisher for this book.
With that, I'd like to thank everybody for dropping into Authors Audio. My name is Jake D. Steele. And until next time, keep dreaming and happy reading. Bye for now.